I am crazy. I am crazy, just like you. I am crazy.
Welcome to Beautiful Minds Radio, destigmatizing mental illness on Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM. I'm Richard J. Dalton, Jr. Tonight on the show, Dr. Chris Gorman and Beautiful Minds social media guru Dana Gillis will discuss unemployment and the effects it can have on mental health. We will also be talking to Dr. Patricia Gorman and Dr. Daniel Zibitz of Life Chiropractic about the relationship between physical and mental health. For our personal story, we welcome Marie Walsh, who will speak about her experience with mental health in prisons. First, let's listen to Power of One by Daniel Lanois. You're listening to Beautiful Minds Radio. Tune into Beautiful Minds Radio, destigmatizing mental illness, on the second and third Mondays of the month at 7 p.m.
Thank you very much, Richard. This is Condition of the Day, Unemployment, and I've got my great co-host here today, Dana, who's actually, in my mind, more of a researcher than anything else. And I'll tell you why I say that, because when he looks things up, there are very, very few mistakes. It's just unbelievable. But Dana, let's launch into some facts about unemployment and mental health.
Well, I mean, you know, talking locally, I mean, in Canada, we're looking at a 7.3 percentage and 7% unemployment rate in BC, but there were only counting the people who are actually looking. There's a whole bunch of people out there right now who are not looking because they've given up or they might be on disability, and that group of people is missing out on a lot of things that come with a steady job, like socialization and advancement in the job and that feeling of accomplishment. There's also a lot of professional development that doesn't happen for people who aren't working in a job, and a lot of educational opportunities that pass them by.
Yeah, it's a huge problem, and I think that's why the American election really is so much about unemployment, this acknowledgement. The government knows that if people are not working, it's so hard on them and their families and society in general that it has to be fixed. And it's a big thing that happens at work is you get to socialize there. And if you lose your job, you can't socialize. And then you start to feel ashamed of not having a job, which makes your mental health much, much worse. And I know you don't like to talk about violence, Dana, and mental health, but the guy who shot all of the Sikh people in the temple days before had lost his job. And that, to me, is that's a testimonial to, but there's a reason why we don't like to talk about mental health and violence. We can talk about mental health and unemployment, but tell me what your thoughts are about that.
Well, I think that in the case of the mass shooting in the U.S., and we were talking about that's a trigger event for that individual, and who knows what led up to that being the reaction that he had, but I remember my last breakdown, and it went resulted in me losing my job. And on the day that I found out, after being away for quite some time, going back and saying, well, we're not going to have you back, that sort of negated all the progress I had made to that point. And I sort of went back into that break from reality that I had been in months ahead, months before.
You know, Dana, you speak it from the heart. You have experienced. I mean, I'll tell you something. When I was living in Southern California, I applied for a job and I didn't get it. It's the first time it's ever happened to me. This is nothing compared to unemployment, and yet I found it very hard to actually be away for a while. You come back to your work, you expect them to be there for you, to care about you, and you don't get your job back. That's an awful thing, and I think our society is hopefully better than that.
Well, I, you know, when you're surrounded by people in the workplace who have informed you of your new unemployment status, permanent unemployment status, and they feel as powerless about it as you do, that decision coming down from a head office elsewhere, you find it hard to know who to strike out at if you know, in whatever form that's going to be, whether it's calling them a dirty name or whatever it is, because it's hard to just passively walk away from an experience like that.
Oh, absolutely. And it's again why we have this show. It's about stigma, it's about mental illness and all the things that, you know, mental health problems. You lose your job, you're going to have a mental health problem because it's going to affect your, you know, you're going to be sad, you're going to be upset, you're going to be angry, you're going to have all these feelings. And those feelings are important, and our society has to be there for people, one, in helping people get back to work, but also provide and destigmatize mental health problems so you can go and get the help that you might need. And I want to thank you for sharing with us tonight. If you can hire somebody out there that needs help, please do. I'm going to turn it back to Richard. I love you, Dana, and Richard, I'm extremely fond of you.
That was psychiatrist Dr. Chris Gorman and his occasional sidekick, Dana Gillis, talking about unemployment. You're listening to Beautiful Minds Radio, destigmatizing mental illness on Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM. I'm Richard J. Dalton, Jr. Coming up, Dr. Patricia Gorman and Dr. Daniel Zibitz from Life Chiropractic talk about stress and physical pain. Also, we will talk to Marie Walsh, author of the memoir, A Tale of Two Lives, the Susan Lefevre story. For now, here is J.J. Leaves L.A. by Daniel Lanois. Listening to Beautiful Minds Radio, destigmatizing mental illness on Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM. I'm Richard J. Dalton, Jr. In the studio today, I'll be interviewing Dr. Patricia Gorman and Dr. Daniel Zibitz from Life Chiropractic in Vancouver. Dr. Gorman has practiced chiropractic since 1997. She uses mental health techniques in her practice after her experience with PTSD research with Marines in San Diego. Dr. Zibitz has practiced since 1999 and is a public speaker to national corporations on chiropractic and the workplace. Tonight they'll speak about the stress response and chiropractic. Welcome to Beautiful Minds.
Hi, Richard.
And Patty, of course, already knows Beautiful Minds as part of our collective, but and Dr. Zibitz, yeah, great to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
So, Dr. Zibitz, tell me, what generates stress in our lives?
Stress is typically generated through, you know, perception of your environment. If you're referring to emotional stress, you're perceiving things, you're either worrying about something happening to you or you're worrying about something that did happen to you. And then there's physical stress. You can have like an overt physical stressor, like a car accident, or repetitive stress injury in the workplace. And of course, there's chemical stresses as well, caused from, you know, drugs or toxins.
I see. And so, Patty, how do the stress, how does that affect, does that affect the way we feel pain? Can stress induce pain?
Well, pain is a physical stressor, and it changes your physiology in terms of the neurotransmitters that are being generated. And so it can create like a chemical change related to the nervous system. And mental health is, well, like your thoughts and your moods and your perceptions are all generated by neurotransmitters. So having pain can actually interfere with these neurotransmitters and then affect one's mental health.
So it's really like an interplay then between stress and pain. Is there an interplay then between stress and pain? Can one cause the other and vice versa, Patty?
Well, absolutely. Pain, like I said, is a stressor, and so it can then cause sort of mental distress, and especially since you may not be able to perform your activities of daily living or perform in your job and that sort of thing, and that creates a lot of mental stress. And obviously pain is a physical stress, so it creates it can create like lactic acid buildup. It can change your fight or flight response, which was basically inherent in your system, and it's something that is designed to keep us from danger. And pain is kind of like a flight fight response or a sympathetic response, and so that will change how you're feeling physically as well, through muscle tension, increased heart rate, glycolysis, lipolysis, and those kind of physical mechanisms.
Okay. And so, Dr. Zibitz, can you add more to about how stress manifests itself? Anything that you might want to add?
Well, the first thing that happens when someone experiences stress is you get a change in chemistry. That change in chemistry is typically an increase in what are called catecholamines, which, like everyone's heard of adrenaline and cortisol. Those substances tend to be released into the body for a good reason, because, you know, when we were evolving as humans, the stress response was fight or flight, i.e. you're in danger, you need to either get away or you need to engage with whatever's threatening you. So when you release things like adrenaline, it puts more, basically, sugar in your bloodstream. Now, the sugar is important because it gives you energy, and it also you get other catecholamines, which help with clotting factors. So it's basically preparing you for a fight or a flight, like to clot quickly, to have quick access to energy. Unfortunately, when in our society, you know, it's not fight or flight, it's an elevated, yet it's a sustained level of stress. That's where people get into danger, because long-term stress actually creates established pathways. And you're talking about pain. One of those established pathways you can call is referred to as hyperesthesia. So people that are suffering with, you know, fibromyalgia, for instance, they have increased sensitivity to pain, and it's because the pain signals are becoming amplified through usually it's a physical stressor, or it could be an intense emotional stressor. But you know, everyone likes to talk about the mind and the body. There's no separation. The mind and body are an extension of each other, and they both play off each other.
I see. And so how is chronic pain can play a big factor, right? You're talking about in terms of stress and chronic pain, that link. How widespread is chronic pain, Dr. Gorman?
Well, the statistics for Canadians are that chronic pain affects about 18% of Canadians, including back pain. Further to what Dr. Zibitz was talking about in terms of established patterns, when there is a sustained kind of pain pattern, as in chronic pain, you get neuroplastic changes that occur with these pain patterns. And so, like, in fact,
what's a neuroplastic pattern?
A neuroplastic change is when you have your nervous system changes its pattern so that it can't shut that pattern down. And so there is, if you have an injury, say, and that injury doesn't get treated appropriately and the pain doesn't go away, your nervous system actually changes and remembers that pain, even though, say, later on you get the treatment required, sometimes the nervous system will perpetuate.
The circuitry is off.
So you
basically rewire your circuitry. That pathway keeps getting fired more and more and more, which makes it harder to change.
I see. Yeah. And so, Dr. Zibitz, is the stress response, so that's what you're getting at? You spoke, or you've written about the stress response being coded into our physiology, and previously you sent me some...
Well, yeah,
that's,
I mean,
there, what referring to?
There are two divisions to your nervous system. Everyone's heard of, like to your autonomic nervous system. When I say autonomic, I mean the automatic stuff, like when you go to sleep, you don't have to think about your heart beating or breathing, the automatic stuff. So that's controlled by two things, your parasympathetic, right, and your sympathetic. Sympathetic is the fight or flight, and that's the one that is triggered with a stress response, because everyone, you know what homeostasis is, like balance in the body?
Mm-hmm.
Right, you have the parasympathetic, which, you know, helps you, your heart rate slow down and lowers blood pressure, and you have your sympathetic, which elevates your heart rate and elevates blood pressure, so they both play off each other. Usually related to some sort of environmental stimulus. And what chronic pain does is it increases irritability, it increases sensitivity to pain, and like Dr. Gorman was just saying, it establishes very deeply rooted pathways that are very, very hard to change. So chronic pain can be a very challenging thing, and it's responsible for a lot of depression, and then they feed off of each other, because oftentimes, I mean, if someone's in chronic pain, they're not happy.
And that leads into the fact that it can, right, be so debilitating, it can eventually, in some cases, lead people to be unable to work. So, Patty, what happens if you have chronic pain and you're unable to work? How can that affect one's mental health?
Well, in terms of just financial stress, the stats show that individuals with chronic pain on average lose 4.6 hours per week of productive time, 28.5 full work days per year, and an average of like $12,000 per year in individual income. So you have the obvious financial stress of not being able to take care of things for your life. But also there comes a sense of identity crisis or loss if one is unable to perform or return to their work. And so with that, people can get activity limitations in intimacy, moving around, dressing, just doing errands. And there was a Canadian community health survey that showed that people with chronic pain had a higher rate of loneliness, desperation, depression, anxiety, sleep disturbances, and fatigue. So it does really affect one's a sense of worth as well as financial stress.
So how can one relieve chronic pain, Dr. Gorman?
Well, as a chiropractor, chronic pain is... comes from a number of different reasons. As a chiropractor, I can really only speak to sort of biomechanical joint and muscle issues. And so in terms of treatment, from a chiropractic perspective, a joint problem or back or neck headaches, that sort of thing, chiropractic is a first line of defense against that. Unfortunately, we don't do a great job at educating the public on getting to chiropractors early in their treatment, and so we often see people at the tail end of, you know, as a last resort when we're kind of having to perform miracles. But other things that really help with chronic pain is in a chiropractic session, we talk about strategies to improve activity at home and work through exercise, ergonomics, activity modification. In our clinic, we do address mental health with some mantra repetition. It's an Eshwarian type of meditation to help manage their pain. And we use music called neuroacoustic music to help bring down the mental noise a little bit that's creating muscle tension. And, you know, a chiropractic session often offers an opportunity for a person to talk about their pain, which can be therapeutic, though we try to, you know, keep their focus off of it and more positive things like getting back to work or modifying their activity. We really recommend that people stay active, and it can be somebody with chronic pain. It can be something very gentle like hatha yoga or water exercise and that sort of thing.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for coming on the show. That was Dr. Patricia Gorman and Dr. Daniel Zibitz of Life Chiropractic on the relationship between physical and mental health. For more information about their practice, visit www.lifechiropracticandmassage.com. Coming up, we talk to Marie Walsh on her memoir.
My life is brilliant. My life is brilliant. You're beautiful. You're beautiful. You're beautiful. It's true. My life is brilliant. My life is brilliant.
Tonight, Dr. Chris Gorman is talking to Marie Walsh, the author of A Tale of Two Lives, The Susan Lefevre Story, a personal memoir of her escape from prison and the double life she had to live after. Tonight, she will talk about growing up with a mother whom she suspected had a mental health problem, the devastating circumstance that resulted from her struggle with drugs, and her fight for freedom and justice. Marie, welcome to Beautiful Minds Radio.
Yes, hello. Hi.
Hi, Marie. It's your old friend Chris Gorman, and I know I'm biased. You're one of the finest people I ever met when I went to California. You pitied me and took me into your home. You've taken my kids in. We met through tennis. I want to make that very clear. Not everybody that meets me is a psychiatric patient. But we met at a great club, and it's just great to have you here to talk about this important issue of mental health and prisons.
Thank you. Yeah. The initial introduction of escaping from prison and my drug problem, and I was thinking, who is that person? You know, it's all true. It's just that, I would like it to be that, and I feel like I'm a very normal person. I had a very normal family, except for, you know, my mother had what I suspect were some issues, but from all other, in our small community, you know, we were a very, exemplary family, you know, when I grew up and, after I escaped from prison and kept a secret of escaping and being a fugitive, I was again a very, you know, blended right in with the community and feel like I led quite a normal life and had some good friends.
Well, sure, it sure seemed normal to me. Marie, tell me about your mother and the tornado.
Well, like I said, we were such a, we just fit in with a small community we lived in the Midwest in Ohio and in the States. And then we were, you know, suddenly had this tornado, moved our house off of the foundation. We had to escape for the night, and it demolished a lot of houses, the two houses next door to ours and a lot of our street and the town. And my mother was never the same, and I think it was just disturbing to her that such a phenomena would happen, and she wasn't able to cope. And then during my teenage years, she went through a period of very high anxiety, kind of a rage for about 2 years. She was very, at a very high level of a lot of anger, and for no apparent reason. And then she had some physical problems, very possibly contributing or as a result. And, you know, in a remarkable way, like I write in my book, she's a remarkable person that she overcame it. And the last few decades of her life then, she turned her life around and dealt with problems, just changed her attitude and dealt with life very differently. and overcame this high, this just strengthened her coping skills and dealt with her issues and was very content person, very well-adjusted person. So, and she did it all on her own in those days, and probably it took a lot of her health. She developed rheumatoid arthritis, and she realized that she would, if she didn't get her self stabilized, I think she later told me this, that she knew it would take more toll on her health. She was already crippled in a wheelchair in her 40s because of the severity of the rheumatoid arthritis.
So Marie, I gotta interrupt you because our listeners are gonna want to hear. Your mother went through this terrible thing. She had a, you know, she got angry. I mean, that's very difficult for an adolescent girl to deal with yourself. You're trying to grow up, and then but how did you end up in prison? Like what was that about?
Well, you know, my mom couldn't get any treatment, especially in the Midwest. It wasn't an option to see somebody, and so she finally did dealt with it on her own terms. It was probably just a lot harder, and I really admire her for it. But as a teenager, that was all came later. As a teenager, it was very difficult for me, and she took a lot of her. Well, it was just very difficult living with her, and that and other, you know, personal issues that I had, I suppose. For whatever reason, I just got in with kids, and it was the 70s, and we got into drugs and drug use, mostly marijuana, but we tried, you know, anything that came along. And so at the age of, I just turned 19, and I got involved in a sting operation with a guy that they were trying to actually arrest, and I just happened to be at the wrong place at the wrong time. Basically, it was a teaspoon of drugs that he sold, and I was waiting in a car nearby, but they just, because of the politics in this little town, it just got, I'd never been in trouble before, but I was given a 10 to 20 year sentence, which was basically very absurd, even, especially for the time. They weren't, you know, it was just an absurd sentence, and a lot of complicating issues, but I wasn't even part of the transaction, and to get that, they told me I'd get probation, and instead they gave me the maximum sentence possible at the time. And, you know, as a teenager who wasn't really coping with reality as it was, just normal reality of having problems with my family, this was quite a blow, as you can imagine. So I found myself as a teenager being sent to a prison in Detroit, notoriously bad prison, harsh prison, for, you know, what I felt was the rest of my life, basically, and a good part of it. And so I had to learn some coping skills at that point, and I kind of thought I probably had some depression, kind of adolescent teenage depression, and the drugs, when I would get high, party, go to parties, it probably exacerbated my feeling down or depressed. And I realized then, with this happening to me, that I had to get control of my life too, and I could no longer afford to allow myself, I don't know, in some ways the luxury of just being depressed. I had to really figure out how to get out of this situation.
Marie, I'm going to have to interrupt you there, but we're going to come back to you in a sec. We're going to do a station identification. I just want to say one thing. The prison you went to, I know this, Amnesty International said it was one of the worst prisons they had encountered. It's just unbelievable you survived. We're going to talk about that right after station identification.
Let's continue our personal story with Marie Walsh.
Hey, Marie, it's Chris Gorman back here asking you some questions. Now, I understand, you know, I mean, this just sounds like an unbelievable experience to be in this prison. You escaped from prison, which I'm sure was terrifying, and then you spent years of freedom, but they weren't completely free, were they?
Well, no, it was a little stressful having it hang over me that any time I could, I knew what I was facing at this point, you know, as far as how bad prisons really are. It was kind of, I didn't imagine it, and I figured they'd be pretty, it would be bad, but I it was pretty bad, so,
it'd be terrifying.
Yeah, so I had to sort of compartmentalize that it wouldn't be worth what I risked to escape if I was going to let an anxiety hang over me and just ruin my... I figured I wanted to live life to the fullest as long as I did have out, and I tried everything. You know, I knew that the law... I had been promised probation, so I was double-crossed by some very corrupt individuals in the system that later it would come out. The prosecutor actually went to prison himself later on for drugs himself, the one that deceived me into saying I would get probation if I pled guilty to something, to the charges. But anyway, so it was just a matter of trying to prove that and vindicate myself, and that was very hard to do under the current system, so it was a matter of just coping with it and trying to lead a normal life and put up with the rest of the other stresses in life, raising a family and, you know, just getting on with day-to-day living. So, but, you know, I managed, and I was very fortunate.
Well, Marie, I want to say something here. I was very fortunate that I got to meet you, and you took me in. You took my kids in. I mean, you're one of the great Americans. You're one of the most generous people I'm ever going to know. Your husband.
Well, you're one of the most funniest and humorous and kindest people too. Patty Bell.
I'm being serious. I mean, I want you to talk a little bit about. I know there was a therapist in the when they dragged you back to prison, which should have been, I'm sure, was awful for you and your family. But you saw a therapist there you experienced a therapist back in the prison. They had some kind of mental health care. Can you tell us
story? Yeah, well, it was interesting that, you know, I was 19, 20, and I stayed in the prison until I was able to escape for about 8 months. And there was absolutely no mental health people there at all. It was just they threw people in this place behind this barbed wire fence, and that was about it. And now, 33 years later, they came and they picked me up again. For a very complicated story, but when they picked me up again, I was able to see that now 30 years, to me, it's into the drug war, because the drug war had started the year before, basically the same time I was put in the first time, and now it was 30 years into it, and I saw that prisons had changed dramatically. For one thing, about 70% of people are in for drug charges. And they did have the Michigan prison that I went to, to Detroit again. It had a mental health department, and it was, in some ways, it was hard fought for, I know, to have that at all. And it was very underfunded, and they had an everyday uphill battle, the people within it. Some of the people weren't real genuine, but some of them were just amazing people, just fighting to salvage lives and pull some of the people out of the general population in the prison as, you know, the few times when they could to try and give them some help and a little bit of a reprieve from the downward pull of the rest of prison, the real corrupting negative attitude, atmosphere. And I just really met... I just always remember those individuals, especially one that she just had so much empathy, and what every day was a struggle for her to fight the system to try and reach out to a few of the women inmate population and help some people. And it at least there was some strides made that there is a little bit of
Marie, you know what? We're going to have to bring you back. This is an amazing story. I cannot thank you enough. We've got to talk more, but I've got to go. It's been great talking to you. I'll talk to you later tonight. All the best. Back to Richard.
Yeah. Well, great show. Great show.
Thank you.
And you've been listening to Marie Walsh discuss her dealing with drugs, being in prison, living with a loved one who has a mental illness, and her experience with mental health in prisons. You're listening to Beautiful Minds Radio, Destigmatizing Mental Illness on CFRO 102.7 FM. I'm Richard J. Dalton, Jr. Coming up, hopefully some interesting color commentary with Dr. Chris Gorman and Dana Gillis on our topics from today's show. But first, let's listen to There's a Light by James Gordon and Sandy Horn.
I know you, you've had enough. Don't like this road, it's way too rough. Want someone to take the wheel and lead you on. You'd like to feel that there's a light.
And now to Dr. Chris Gorman and Dana Gillis on our topics from today's show.
Thank you very much, Richard. And Dana, I want you to try and be gentle with me tonight. I just flew back from Calgary. I'm visiting my amazing daughter, Jennifer, and her amazing husband, Dennis. He's a president of Emerson Engineering. And I got to tell you something, when I think about my kids, it makes me cry. I'm a sensitive person. Be gentle.
Well, more than once, Dr. Gorman, you've proven yourself to be extra sensitive in the studio here, but I think it's time to get back to the show.
Okay. No. Let's enough tears. All right, two amazing interviews tonight. One on the importance of your physical health, brought to us by Life Chiropractic and my amazing wife, Dr. Patty Gorman, and her boss, Dr. Dan, the chiropractor, and then my interview with Marie Walsh, one of the finest people I know from my favorite city on the planet, San Diego, California. Dana, tell me your thoughts about what you heard.
Well, I thought, you know, first of all, I want to say that the interview with Mary Walsh was very powerful and probably could have gone on for another half hour. I think that we all would have been really interested in listening to that. And, you know, I'm always interested in hearing what Dr. Patricia Gorman has to say, because she's a smart cookie and she has a great background doing a lot of different things besides chiropractor. So, but you know what I really want to talk about? Just briefly. You know, this weekend I went to the Vancouver Zombie Walk, and I got some great pictures, but something else happened when I was there, because I was talking to some of the zombies.
Okay.
Some of them, you know, you got a lot of bad brains, but you know, a couple of them, they really reassured me that I would survive the global zombie apocalypse, because they don't eat bipolar brains.
Is that?
Yeah, they find them bitter. They find them bitter to the taste. Yeah. And so I'm really confident that I will survive the global zombie apocalypse. But I got to tell you, more than the zombie apocalypse, the thing I fear worst of all is the ukulele, global ukulele apocalypse.
Oh.
Think of it, wave upon wave of 20-something-year-old men coming at you, and all they want is peace, love, and understanding.
Bring them on.
I would rather have my brains eaten by a zombie. I mean, are you with me on this?
Dana, I knew there was going to be good news tonight, and this is it. You're going to survive some kind of apocalypse, and you're a brave man. You can tell us you're bipolar one more time. You're unreal, but I want to go back just briefly to physical and mental health. They are intimate bed partners, and thank God. And I don't know if you can say that, because you know some people don't believe in a higher power. But and I apologize for the digression. But chiropractors really do help people. I'm proud to be married to one. I'm proud to be a great one. But you know, people have to realize they're all different. You know, a little bit like psychiatrists. Some psychiatrists are really good, and some less so.
Some should be parking cars. There's no doubt about it. You know, I had a psychiatrist who used to color while I was talking. So you know, what are you going to do?
Well, you know, Dana, I you know, again, the show's about stigma, right? It's about prejudice and how that's wrong. It's always okay to attack the people with mental health problems, even though every person on earth has a mental health problem of some sort, right? I mean, now there's obviously degrees, but to discriminate against people because they've got a mental, is crazy. But it's not the only place for stigma. medical doctors, some of them have a problem with chiropractors. That's their stigma. That's their prejudice. And yet, it can stand in the way of people getting adequate relief of their pain or back problem or whatever. I mean, it's just this prejudice thing, I'm just so glad to be on this show.
Well, I don't, you know, all I know about chiropractic is, you know, some of my friends, they went through the standard prescribed rehab covered by medical and came out at not really feeling well and healed, and out of desperation, because they were forced to do it, went to a chiropractor, and bada bing, they're doing better. Huh. Unfortunately, it's out of pocket, but they certainly felt it was worth it.
Well, you know, it's a great treatment, and I got to go back to Marie too. I couldn't agree more. We got to have more time for Marie. We're going to have her on again. She's got more to tell us about the bravery and the courage of confronting a mental health problem in your family member, ending up in a prison, escaping, and then being dragged back. I mean, it's just an amazing story.
Right, and a lot of what she had to say about the care in prison was really important.
Absolutely.
That was Dr. Chris Gorman and Dana Gillis talking about the segment topics on our show tonight. I'm Richard J. Dalton, Jr., and you're listening to Beautiful Minds Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM, Destigmatizing Mental Illness. Please visit our community events page for mental health-related events. Our website is www.beautifulmindsradio.org. Our team includes Brendan Beiser, Lori Collerman, Stephen Elliott, Dana Gillis, Dr. Chris Gorman, Dr. Patty Gorman, Will Martin, Joelle Holdrene, Sarah Casamong, our newest member, Blue Hardman, and myself, Richard J. Dalton, Jr.